Okay, let's go ahead and get started here. I'm Jamie Robinson, the Editor-in-Chief of Health Affairs, and I am very pleased to introduce to you today Sean Keehan and Andrea Sisco, who are the senior authors of a paper we'll be publishing tomorrow on the CMS Actuary's 10-Year Projections for Healthcare Expenditures, basically how things are good and getting better if you're a seller of healthcare services in America. And we at Health Affairs are very pleased to every year publish both the CMS's annual cost of healthcare report, which we did in January for 07, as well as the rolling 10-year projections. And I think for the first time this year, CMS did a, because they've been doing these for 10 years now, a retrospective, how good are the projections? How good are 10 years projections? And the answer is pretty good. So with no more further ado, I want to allow them to take it away and tell us how things are going to look a decade from now.
Okay, great. Well,
Before you start, I just add that material is embargoed from the briefing until 12:01 a.m. tomorrow, the 26th.
Okay, great. Well, again, thank you for the introduction, and thank you all for coming today. It's, again, each year we're really pleased with the coverage that we get for both the historical and the projections article. And you know, we provide the numbers, and we leave the debate to others. And your work in promoting the article and distributing it to people has really been helpful. So thank us again for what you've done in the past. Again, you know, after our presentation, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. First, before we get started the presentation, I just want to quickly introduce our team that I might be. We might be asking, calling on to answer questions at the end of the presentation. Again, when they do, if we do call on them, then they'll state their name again. But from the window down, we have Kevin Lyons, Chris Trufer, Kent Clemens, Jonathan Silas, Kathy Cowan, Sheila Smith, John Poizel, and a special guest is our Chief Actuary, Rick Foster. So, And Jamie mentioned about the projection accuracy report. And if it wasn't in your folder, but it is on the table outside. And for those of you who are listening to the audio version of this report, the projection accuracy report, if everything goes right, and hopefully it will, tomorrow morning, that will be the link is in footnote 8 of the report. And if you look, and that's that takes you to the ANG projections page. And halfway down the page is the download section, and you'll see projection accuracy there. So with that, I'd like to start the presentation, and Andy will be doing the first step.
Thank you, Sean. I'd like to begin with an overview of our main takeaway points that will be explained in greater detail over the course of the presentation. Our first finding is that we expect growth in national health spending to remain stable over the projection period, which is 2007 through 2017. At 6.7% per year. At the same time, we expect that economic growth will slow to approximately 4.7% per year. This combination of steady growth in NHE and slowing economic growth leads us to expect that the health share of GDP will grow to nearly 20% by 2017. A steady outlook in overall spending growth does not necessarily imply that there is steady growth over all the underlying sectors and payers. Therefore, we find that we are expecting divergent trends in both payers and sectors. We are expecting a general acceleration in public spending over the projection period through 2017, and then a deceleration in private spending growth. Among the sectors, we are expecting to see an acceleration in hospital spending growth in 2007, followed by a general deceleration in growth through 2017, whereas prescription drug spending is expected to decelerate in 2007, then gradually accelerate through 2017. Finally, this year's report has a new feature that resembles a supplemental memo to the 2007 trustees report, in which we conduct a simulation where we test the effect of a 0% update to the Medicare physician fee schedule, as opposed to the negative update that was in current law prior to the passage of the Medicare, Medicaid, and SCHIP Extension Act of 2007, which was passed in late December. And the results of that simulation will be given later on in the presentation. This slide gives a pictorial view of our first major finding and some of the causation behind the second. As you can see, there's stable growth in NHE projected over the projection period at 6.7%. And again, you can see the GDP growth is expected to slow. The differential between these growth rates is expected to be about 1.9 percentage points over the projection period. This is a larger differential than seen in 2004 through 2006, where the differential was about 0.3 percentage points. However, this is a smaller differential than seen over the last 30 years on average at 2.7 percentage points. And again, the resulting expectation from stable NHE growth and slowing economic growth leads to the increase in the health share of GDP to 16.3% in 2007, which is our expectation, from 16% in 2006 to 19.5% by 2017, nearly one-fifth of the economy. Now we'd like to talk a little bit about the divergent trends that we see underneath the steady growth outlook in NHE. We're expecting public spending to slow in 2007 and private spending to accelerate. As we know from the release of the historical NHE, that the 2006 growth rates in public and private do reflect the implementation of the Medicare Part D drug benefit. Over the rest of the projection period, we're expecting public spending to accelerate to 7.4% by 2017. And the acceleration towards the end of the projection period is attributed to the enrollment of the leading edge of the baby boom generation in Medicare. Private spending, on the other hand, is expected to accelerate through 2009 and then decelerate over the remainder of the projection period to 6.0% by 2017 due to the expectation of lower economic growth. Hospital spending growth, as stated before, is expected to accelerate from 7% in 2006 to 7.5% in 2007, due in large part to increased Medicaid payment rates, which led to an acceleration in Medicaid spending. Over the remainder of the projection period, private spending is expected to slow, and this is expected to drive the overall expected slowdown in hospital spending, mostly due, again, to the expected slowdown in economic growth. Hospital spending is expected to reach 6.4% by 2017. In terms of the share of NHE, we expect hospital spending to remain the largest payer, accounting for 31% of NHE in 2007 and 31.5% of NHE by 2017. And with that, Sean will continue discussing our major findings.
Thank you, Andrea. So prescription drugs. In 2007, you'll see that there is a deceleration to 6.7% from 8.5% in 2006. And this is all due to slowing price growth. The CPI for prescription drugs, the public CPI for prescription drugs for 2007 was 1.4% versus 3.5% in 2006. And then throughout the rest of the projection period, there's a gradual acceleration expected, and there's three reasons for this. First, we do expect some gains in utilization because of lower thresholds for treatment for conditions like cholesterol and high blood pressure, and coupled with the guidelines saying that if your cholesterol is this level before, we may not have treated you with the drug. Now we will. Coupled with that, with an aging population, we do expect that's going to cause some increases in utilization for some therapeutic classes. Secondly, as this graph shows, the last 8 years, there's been a big dip in the growth rate, and a lot of this is explained by large increases in the generic dispensing rate, which in some years has gone up by 4 or 5 percentage points, which alone has slowed growth and subtracted from drug spending growth by about 2 to 3 percentage points. And so even though we do expect that drug spending will, or the generic dispense rate will continue to increase throughout the projection period, the large increases that we've seen in the past is not expected. And so that will allow for some utilization increases to actually show up in the growth numbers, whereas in the past few years they may not have been. And finally, we do expect some increase in the number of new drugs approved. Again, this is a very uncertain part of our projection because we don't know what drugs are going to be approved in the next, two, not to mention 5 or 10 years. But we do know that, and if what drugs are approved, what effect on spending they will have. But we do know that FDA approvals have been at historic lows in the past few years, and there is a strong pipeline, especially for phase 1 and phase 2 drugs. So towards the end of the projection period, we do expect that there will be some new drugs which will drive increases in utilization. And now moving on to Medicare. Medicare is projected to slow to 6.5% in 2007 from 18.7% in 2006, which, again, the strong growth in 2006 is due to the introduction of Medicare Part D. This growth of 6.5% in 2007 is a little below the average of the past few years, and one reason for that is there were lower, smaller increases in Medicare Advantage plan payments as a result of risk adjustments in 2007. Then in 2008, we expect to bump up a small increase in growth in Medicare, and this is mainly due to the expectation of stronger growth in Medicare inpatient hospital. And then towards the end of the projection period, there is a gradual acceleration, and this is mainly due to the first baby boomers coming in to Medicare. And so that's the acceleration towards the end of the projection period is enrollment driven. Okay, these next two slides talk about the simulation that Andrea mentioned in her intro. And Andrew gave a little bit of background, but I just wanted to point out that in past years, because there have been negative updates projected negative updates expected for Medicare physician payments, what we've always said in the projection is we think that the Medicare projections are likely understated. And the feedback from folks like yourself has always been, well, can you quantify that at all? And we will always say, we really can't quantify it, but because of the supplemental memo that Kent Clemens wrote in the 2007 Medicare Trustees Report, as a supplement to the 2007 Medicare Trustees Report, his memo was on two illustrative scenarios for alternative physician payment systems. I believe it's endnote 18 in the report. And because of that, we were able to actually piggyback on that analysis and complete an analysis of simulation of a 0.0% Medicare physician payment update scenario, which was one of the two scenarios that Kent wrote in his memo. And as you can see, by 2017, Medicare physician spending would be 25.3% higher than in the current law scenario. And then if you go up to total Medicare, the difference is a little smaller, but total Medicare spending would be 6.4% higher by 2017 versus the current law scenario. And then if you look to the next slide, just the total NHG, total health spending, the difference is 0.7% by 2017. And so what this means would be, instead of 19.5% health spending as a share of GDP like we have in our current law projections, it would be 19.7%. So it would only be 0.2 percentage point higher. And before I move on, I just want to point out the note that's at the bottom of the last two slides. And this basically says that our current law projections really only give the primary impacts of the Medicare physician payment negative updates. And there are some secondary impacts which are listed on the slide that are not included. And so I just wanted to point that out before moving on. Okay, next we'll go into Medicaid. And you can see the dip in 2006, mostly caused by the movement of dual eligibles. The payments for their drugs from Medicaid to Medicare, and the bump up in 2007 to 8.9% growth. Now, this growth is again, a little bit higher than the average for the past few years, and the main reason is that Medicaid had implemented some provider payment either freezes or cuts in 2005 and 2006. And so at the time the decisions were made for 2007, state fiscal conditions had improved. And so, you know, at this time, which may have been 18 months ago, they either lifted the payment freezes or removed the payment cuts. And the increases in the payment rates are the main reason for this increase in growth. And again, you see it in hospital, which Andrew mentioned, the most. And as far as the rest of the projection period, the growth is averaging 7.9%, which is a little stronger than total health spending growth. And one reason for this stronger growth is that the home and community-based waiver program, which is the program where states try to move nursing home eligible people into get them care in the community instead of having to go to a nursing home. This the expectation is that expenditures for this program will continue to increase, and so that's one reason why the growth is higher than total health spending. Okay, next, this slide talks about the private health insurance premiums and benefits per enrollee. As you can see in the historical period, premiums and benefits have had a there's been times in the past that it's been quite significantly higher or lower. Premiums have been significantly higher or lower than underlying benefits, and in the projection period, we're actually not expecting this. This premiums being higher and lower than underlying benefits is mostly due to the underwriting cycle, where because insurers have to set the premiums typically 18 months before underlying benefits are known, there could be some errors in their forecast, and so they're going to either be higher or lower than the underlying trend. And so in the projection period, we have an underwriting cycle, but some of the experts that we talked to believe that the underwriting cycle will be milder because of better information systems will allow insurers to better predict the trends than they have in the past. And so for the projection period, we have premiums peaking in 2009 at 6.9%, just slightly above underlying medical benefits, and then decelerating throughout the projection period, ending at about 5.9% by 2017. This slide shows out-of-pocket spending, and the dip in 2006 is mostly due to Medicare beneficiaries who might not have had drug coverage in 2005, now having Part D and associated with that lower out-of-pocket spending for prescription drugs. And then for 2007 through 2009, we have growth around 5%. And then throughout the projection period, we have growth accelerating slightly to get to about 6% by 2017. And the reason for this expectation is that insurers and the employers are expected to, with future increases in cost, they're expected to more equally shift those costs to beneficiaries in the form of more cost sharing than they might have done in the past. Because if you can see in the historical period that that the growth in out-of-pocket spending is not kept up with the growth in private health insurance spending. But because employers are feeling more of the, the cost is growing and it's becoming more difficult to face these costs, we do expect that in the projection period, at least by the end, we expect basically a convergence of the growth rate in private health insurance spending will be similar to the growth rate in out-of-pocket spending. Okay, so the past four slides I gave the major payers, the outlook for the major payers. And so I just wanted to put this slide here at the end because I wanted to give who paid for health care in 2006 versus what our expectation is who's going to pay for health care in 2017. And so private health insurance is expected to be the largest payer both in 2006 and 2017, except it will go down a percentage point, so it's expected to be 33% by 2017. Medicare is expected to increase 2 percentage points from 19% to 21%. And so, you know, we have the baby boom generation coming to Medicare. However, it's not going to create a huge jump, at least for the first the next 10 years. It's only going to increase 2 percentage points, which some people have found a little surprising. It's not more. But, you know, this is just the initial wave of the baby boom generation, so 21%, just 2 percentage points less than, or 2 percentage points more than the last historical year. Medicaid is also projected to grow 2 percentage points from 15% in 2006 to 17% in 2017. And this is just as a result of the fact that growth is expected to be 7.9% per year, average 7.9% per year, which is about a little bit more than a percentage point higher than total health spending. So that causes the increase in share. Finally, I just want to mention that out-of-pocket share is projected to go down by 1 percentage point by 2017, to be 11%. However, that does not mean that consumers aren't going to be feeling the pinch of higher health spending. They're certainly going to be, as I said in the previous slide, asked to share the burden more than probably in past years. Okay, so finally, I just want to reiterate our major findings that Andy went over earlier. We expect health spending growth to be steady throughout the projection period, about 6.7% per year. And that coupled with lower projected economic growth gets a health spending share of the economy about 20%, nearly 20% by the end of the projection period. However, the stable growth is not for all payers. We have private decelerating with public accelerating. And the sectors are not all constant as well. As Andrew said, hospital is projected to decelerate while prescription drug spending is expected to accelerate. And so finally, the 0.0% Medicare physician update scenario that we ran this year showed telehealth spending going up by 0.7% by 2017 relative to our projected current law estimates. And I think there's an error in the slides. I think it had 0.7 percentage points, and you know the growth by 2017 is the cumulative growth is just expected to be 0.7% higher, and it's not percentage points, and so that would, with that scenario, health as a share of GDP would still be a little bit under 20%, 19.7 instead of 19.4. Okay, so with that, that's our last slide. So we'd be happy to answer questions. Yes.
Hi, I'm Will Dunham with Reuters. Is there one particular area, looking from last year to 2017, that is most significant in driving the increase in health spending?
I guess I wouldn't say most significant. I mean, in the article, we certainly mention that the baby boom generation coming into Medicare is going to have an effect on driving at least the public share higher. And then, again, that's enrollment driven. And the reason that we chose this year to talk about it is that for this projection period, we have six of the years with some baby boomers coming in because they're going to come in starting in 2011. And so since more than half of the years there's going to be some baby boomers in the Medicare, we thought that it would be right to specify it. However, as I just mentioned with the Medicaid strong growth, that's also a reason. So I wouldn't say that there's just one significant factor, but certainly strong growth in Medicare and Medicaid play a role. Yes?
Matt Tobias with Modern Healthcare, and I guess this is more just a question of curiosity, but with a weakening economy and talk of a recession down the road, would any of that play into the projections here? And if so, what impact would that have?
Okay, so first I want to point out that we don't have a recession forecast in our macroeconomic assumptions. We use the macro for the first 2 years of the projection period. We use the consensus forecast from the blue chip economic indicators. And again, this was back in December, but they were at that time they were projecting slower growth in the first half of 2008, picking up in the second half. And the current consensus is close to that. Maybe it's a little lower, but it's still not forecasting recession. So that's not something that's in our forecast. But in past years, with slower economic growth, health spending has been relatively stable. And so it has, in the past, we've seen that when if there is slower economic growth, it might cause the health spending as a share of the economy to increase, because while general economic growth might fall, health spending might also fall a little bit, but not probably as much as economic growth.
Can we assume, Marilyn Serafini with National Journal, can we assume that we'd see that in programs like Medicaid and SCHIP?
I'm sorry. See what?
If we did see larger health care spending or as a, related to the economy, mm-hmm. Because of if we did go into a recession, would we see greater spending? Would we see that show up more disproportionately in programs for the low income, such as Medicaid and SCHIP?
Okay, well, I mean
that's where I naturally take it. But
yeah. Well, let me just go into one of these background slides, which I asked. This was a slide that the historical that was used in January, and basically it shows the effect of the last three recessions, and really that's all we can speak to is what's happened historically, and so you're right that Medicaid spending did increase during the recessions, but as far as what else, I mean. Chris, would you have any?
To the extent that Medicaid enrollment tends to increase at a faster rate during economic slowdowns or recessions, there may be an acceleration in Medicaid as a result. To the extent it would reflect the SCHIP, probably not as much since the program has fixed a lot of its federal side and the state side as well. So. Probably wouldn't expect to see anything extra that would affect it.
And would there be if we did see an increase in Medicaid, would we then automatically see maybe even a decrease on the private side as perhaps some employers maybe cut back on benefits, stop offering insurance? I mean, I don't know how quickly those sorts of things happen, but
it's hard to say. I mean, a lot of it depends on the magnitude, the length of anything, the economic cycle. So it would be hard to say at this point. What sort of overall impact it might have beyond the fact that historically Medicaid tended to see a bit faster of enrollment or slowdowns.
Chris, just to add a little bit to that, private spending does actually eventually respond very strongly to fluctuations in Medicaid growth. but eventually being the keyword there. So the reason why you see the health share rising generally in recessions is because healthcare tends to respond very slowly to changes in output and income. So that while you probably would see a little bit of a reaction in terms of slower growth in private health insurance spending, it would generally tend to be less proportional to the decrease in the GDP that you would expect to see in a recession. What you would expect to see is a reaction down the road. And based on our models, you'd expect to see lower growth about 3 years after the recession. In the context of our model, we estimate that the peak effect occurs about 3 years later. And the reason is that you have a lot of that effect is believed to occur through systemic and institutional change, which takes a long time to feed through the system here. It has to occur through government action, through employer action, and all of that, through contractual arrangements, and all of that takes a long time to happen.
John Reichardt with Congressional Quarterly's Health Beat. Could you elaborate on the reason why private spending growth will decelerate?
Okay. Well, one reason why private growth will decelerate is the fact that you're bringing baby boomers as they go to Medicare, they're leaving private health insurance. So that's one reason, and you know, those will be, even though the Medicare population, when they go into Medicare, they're going to make Medicare younger. They'll make the pool of private health insurance enrollees.
Reducing private spending, and the aging effects actually go slightly in the opposite direction.
Right.
But on balance, it tends to reduce private spending relative.
Right. And the other reason, in addition to that, is we have a model which Sheila could elaborate on if need be, that gives our private health insurance or our total private spending growth patterns, and disposable personal income is a main driver in that model. And our expectation with that is that growth will be slower in the projection period, and that feeds in through a lag. And so the slower economic growth, as Sheila mentioned, with the institutional changes, it takes about 5 years for income growth to fully be impacted, and so with our economic assumptions, you know, that's what's one reason. I don't know if you want to say more about that.
Gradually slowing growth to a trend-driven growth in GDP and as a result of disposable income, and you see the effects of that in a fairly mild deceleration in
Did you say that the private insurance premiums would grow? I can't remember what the average yearly rate was. Was it 5%?
No. As far as the average rate, I don't think we have that on slides, but it's the premiums is the. I know this might be difficult to see on the slide. The premiums is the orange line, and so that peaks at 6.9% in 2009, and decelerates to 5.9% in by 2017. So maybe that averages around 6.4.
But it's a rough between 5 and 7%.
Yes.
I mean, how does that compare with say the past 20 years? That's pretty low, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not inflation. It's
right.
Not in real terms.
What makes a difference? But is there a difference in nominal terms as well?
Well, I mean, if you go back to the growth in health spending, private health spending, in this case, for the GDP, the picture is similar in that we expect growth to be. Supposed to be faster in real terms than it has been over the past 10 years, but substantially slower than it has been on average in the entire history, in particular prior to ureterectomy.
Do we have a comparison number for what this would look like if it was adjusted for inflation?
I mean, we can try to look into that and you know, if you give me your card, we can try to pull something together.
That would be easy to do.
Okay.
Also, regarding the baby boomers, and is the reason that the growth is not going up dramatically in Medicare? I'm wondering if that has to do, one, with just simply the number of people that are coming in initially, but also, does that have to do with the risk involved? Because the people who are entering are the younger seniors. I mean, how much is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true that they, it's the first baby boomers, so you're not getting the whole generation in, obviously, at first, and they are the youngest, so they will have, the Medicare population is getting younger, so per beneficiary, the costs are going down.
Let me add to that just a little bit. The first impact that you mentioned, the greater number of employees, recently, the number of Medicare beneficiaries increased to maybe 1% per year. When the baby boom shows up, that would increase about 3%.
Did you say 2 or 3?
3%.
3.
So initially, we get lots more beneficiaries, a faster birth rate of beneficiaries. But the other side of what you said is also quite true. We're getting additional 65-year-olds and 66-year-olds, and they're not our most expensive beneficiaries on average. Moreover, among the expensive 65 and 66-year-olds, many of them are already on Medicare because they qualified based on disability some number of years ago. So they're already there. They're not adding to the acceleration of the cost.
And if what everyone seems to be saying, that this baby boomer generation is more apt to work longer than their predecessors, and so if they continue with their private insurance, I'm assuming that has some effect also to keep Medicare from zooming upward?
This is a relatively modest effect. It's true enough that there's been a longish-term trend towards people working a little later ages, especially women. So it's a strong impact for women working at higher ages than in the past. The effect for men is much smaller. But still, by the time you get to 65, the normal eligibility age for Medicare, the labor force has gone down at those ages by a lot compared to the earlier ages. It's also true enough that if you get somebody who's still working at 65 and they work for an employer, I think you have to have at least 100 employees, then the Medicare secondary payer provision kicks in. So if there's coverage through that employer, they pay first. That itself is also not
an important note to reinforce as well, that the shifting of the baby boom generation into Medicare is not a reason for overall spending growth going forward. It's sort of the underlying reason behind our sort of decelerating private projection and accelerating public projection, which of course would include Medicare. But it's not, the aging of the population itself is not making a terribly big contribution to spending growth overall.
Just shifting it from private to public.
One category to another.
Not entirely.
Not entirely, but it's relatively small compared
but
to...
But can we assume that that's going to change as we go on? I mean, at what point does it change? What's our magic year where that's really going to change?
Beyond this. That's always our scope with the life.
After age 75, on average, healthcare costs take off. They really start taking off after age 50, but especially after 75, it's much more pronounced.
So 10 years?
Yes. Within the first 10 years, we're projecting to get the old people, but not lots. Watch out for the next 10 years.
Matt?
How about that last comment? Give any indication of how much it increases due to the factors of demographics and of price and of use, just roughly.
Exhibit 4 in our article has we broke the factors accounting for growth into four factors, and prices is the largest factor, with utilization being next, and population and the age sex mix are the smaller factors. So a lot of people might report that the aging of the population is a driver for healthcare, and that's not what we found, and that's not what other research has found. So really the biggest factor driving health spending is price growth, with utilization being second. Sure, absolutely. Yep.
Simulation at 0.0 has a small effect. But it's hard to get a fix on what the baseline, what that's been compared to. You got a 6 month plus half a percent, then you got a much larger negative effect on that. So what I'm trying to get at is, say, if where there's a physician payment fix, and you get, say, 1% or 2% growth in physician payment over the next projection period. Mm-hmm. Can you get an order of magnitude sense of what the impact of that would be as compared to the 0.2% in 0.0?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so first off, as Andrew mentioned, we weren't able to include the 0.5% for the first 6 months of 2008 because that was passed after we finished our projections. So we only did this simulation for 0.0%, and as far as speculating what it would be if it was 1% or 2%, I mean, unfortunately, we didn't do that. I mean, we just, because people have asked us, what's the quantify this how much of the projection is likely understated. We just gave one scenario, and the other scenarios, we really can't speak to what that effect would be because, we didn't run those numbers.
The other part of that is that it's not the relationship between, the 0% theoretical illustration you gave and something higher, 1%. You think, okay, should we add the difference 0 to 1% on top of them? So that's the wrong thing to add because under current law, when does it go minus 13? Can we just put it up? From the highest point of 2008 to where we start in 2009 is minus 15%. So going and then for several years after that, further reductions of 5% for a number of further years. So if you think about it, pumping that up to 0%. But otherwise, we get minus 15 followed by number minus 5s. That's a big change. If you go then an additional 1%, that's a small change on top of that.
How could the net effect be so small if you such a big change between the simulation and the current law?
The charts are in there. If you look at the impact on Medicare physician spending, it's actually quite large.
So, just that way, given the presentation, as you can see that the Medicare position, how much it's understated, grows throughout the projection period, being 25.3%. By 2017, and then, the total health spending, which is on the next slide, relatively small, at just 0.7% by 2017. So, this was the first time we've done this analysis. So, Rick raises a very good point about the about the how an effect on 1 year, you increase the payments 1 year, it doesn't change the system. So there's just going to be negative updates for many years afterwards. So it's an important point to make, and so we're just really happy to be able to, because of the piggybacking off the supplemental memo, just give one sort of one number that might give an effect about how much these projections might be understated. So really, unfortunately, that's all we can do there.
That answers the question. It's just that fixing position payment in the oddest kind of way will not blow up the spending picture.
Matt, you had a question?
Oh, I do, right. From one provider group to the next, I wanted to look at the hospital spending and some of the projections there.
Okay.
And can you go into some of the factors that that are impacting hospitals right now? I think the projection is a slight increase and then a deceleration of growth.
Sure. As I mentioned, one of the primary drivers of the 7.5% expected growth rate for 2007 is increased Medicaid payment rates. As Sean was mentioning, states had, the last recession, did have some payment freezes or cuts in place. Those were lifted, and then that led to, higher payment rates for fiscal 2007, which led to an acceleration in 2007. That's the main driver there. And then again, the deceleration over the remainder of the projection period is mostly attributable to the expected lower private spending growth trend. There is a bit of an acceleration in private towards through the end of the projection period. Again, that idea of the baby, leading edge of the baby boom generation, but it is somewhat modest. But again, as Sheila was mentioning, in terms of what drives that private spending trend is sort of this lagged response to changes in income, changes in the economy.
Where is that private dollar expected to go? If it's not going to go to hospitals, would it go to outpatient care or other places where they can get services other than a hospital?
That is an individual decision that's not included in this particular projection.
But the growth in hospital spending is actually going faster and accounted for a slightly greater share of the health dollars by the end of the projection.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the question. And that is a relatively faster growth hospital spending in comparison with the post-inpatient CVS period from 1984 through about the mid-1990s. It continues a trend that we've seen from the late 1990s and relatively faster growth.
Yes.
You talk about the methodology for these projections similar to the methodology of the Medicare trustees.
Okay, so the methodology in the Medicare trustees report, we use their Medicare projections. We take those as given, and we have to crosswalk it so they meet the terms of the national health expenditure accounts are defined. But we don't make any changes to them except for aligning the terms correctly. And then we also use the Medicaid projections that are used in the president's budget as well. But then as far as our methodology, what we do is we have models for private health spending and also other public health spending. And those are econometric models. And so we use those. We've had a history of them. We try to improve them each year. And so it's certainly a different modeling type of modeling than might be done in the Medicare trustees report. But we certainly look at the reports, and this projection accuracy report has given us further incentive to make sure that we're not having any bias in the models or try to make the models as accurate as possible. Sean, I don't know if you wanted to mention anything else about
just basically the question that we attempt to answer is given the outlook for Medicare and Medicaid that comes out of the exercises and also the macro picture. What can we expect from private spending? It's to some extent a wraparound projection. And there are relationships between private and public spending that we try to take into account. But largely our focus is on the private spending.
You had mentioned that one of the factors in Medicaid spending, the accelerating rate of Medicaid spending growth, that this was partly a reflection of the shift to home and community-based care, which seems to be contrary to what the advocates of that say, you know, namely that it would save money. Could you explain?
Oh, okay. So it's again, we can't speak to whether it would save money or not, but we know that it's in different buckets in the national health expenditure accounts. So the home and community-based way we're spending for that is in our other personal health care category versus the nursing home category, which is what nursing home expenditures are in. So we don't we know that states have the expectation from interviews with state of Medicaid officials is that they'll continue to try to push that, because I assume they expect that will save money, but it's in different buckets, and so you know, we see an increase in other personal health care in Medicaid because of the home community based waivers, and Medicaid nursing home is a little bit lower. Chris, I don't know if you want to elaborate on this at all. Or...
No, there isn't. Much I think would add that, but it just generally reflects the preference, I think, of states to use community-based care and home health care for their long-term care needs. So we're definitely expecting to see that to be one of the strong areas of growth.
Is Medicaid typically the primary payer when it comes to home health services?
Medicare primarily.
Yeah.
About three quarters of
is the combination.
Medicaid is certainly one of the strongest, biggest payers of long term care overall as well.
Yeah. I have the numbers in front of me. Medicare in 2006 paid for 37.5% of home health care, and Medicaid combination paid for about 33%, and then in the projection period, the numbers are similar. So,
right.
So you know, together Medicare and Medicaid definitely pay for the largest share.
On almost all your graphs, the big difference between the past and the future is that the past is all these numbers are very cyclical, and the future projections have no cycle to them. And is that because it will be no cycle, or because the models don't have cyclical effects in them? Or I mean, it's striking. I'm not talking about the underwriting cycle. I'm talking about the actual cost numbers.
Right. Well, as I said before, we have our macroeconomic assumptions are based on the Social Security Trustees Report, the 2007 Social Security Trustees Report. And then we use for 2007, 2008, the consensus of the blue chip. And so basically, you know, that's what they project. And so there's no recession forecast in there, or there's no boom period where growth is expected to be, you know, substantially higher than the average. So our macroeconomic assumptions don't have a cycle. So, you know, we certainly are not going to change our macroeconomic assumptions to put one in where...
But even also on the healthcare cost expenditure assumptions, they're all flat.
Well,
that's, you know, whatever. Right,
so, our biggest variable, which historically we found driving health spending growth, is disposable personal income growth. And the relationship between GDP growth and disposable personal income growth is pretty stable. And so since there's no, you know, big jump in disposable personal income growth, we're not going to have a big jump in our models of at least private health spending growth. And Yeah, go ahead.
A little bit. There usually is a cycle of the projection of private spending. And that reflects the inclusion of the disposable personal income variable in particular. We include a private living average in the model. So we see the effect of historical growth feeding through growth of private spending over the first half of the projection. And what we do for the macro assumptions, we eventually reach a trend of forecast growth. So what you see is whatever's in the pipeline historically for disposable personal income feeds through and affects healthcare spending over a period of 5 years, and then it would converge to a trend that might reflect only demographic population differences. So that's what you could expect to see. In this case, the pattern of growth in disposable personal income over the past few years has been pretty choppy because there have been some substantial effects of things like tax situations, and it hasn't tracked GDP exactly. So it's really almost by accident that when you take the moving average that feeds into our econometric model, in this case it produces a line that's close to flat. It's not precisely flat. There's a slight cycle, and you have factors at the beginning and the end which tend to push growth up a little bit. So the net effect of all of those factors is a very flat forecast. But that would necessarily be the case intrinsically.
I'd be sort of interested in seeing a chart some other time of what your past 10-year forecasts were. I mean, literally, what did it look like? Was it also flat? I mean, is the methodology drive it towards because of the average moving average? Or have we tamed the beast here of the volatility of healthcare? Or is it just,
The 5-year moving average is a very good predictor of healthcare spending growth. And it's largely for that reason that we have a pretty good record of accuracy at the aggregate level. And because we have that term in there, we generally had a bit of a cyclical pattern. For the past few years, at least on the private side, we had the feed-through effects of the last recession, and then going into a period of higher growth reflecting the past few years where growth has been stronger. So you have seen a bit of a cycle. And that would generally tend to be the case. That's been the case. That model has essentially been in place since the first forecast that we did on this basis in 1997, with some slight changes along the way. So that if you take a look at that variable in particular, it'll give you a pretty good idea of what our forecast would be. And you can look at successively the forecast that we produce over time and see how this has changed. And in many cases, it's the change is accounted for by changes in the macroeconomic data or on the projections for those variables.
Another point that speaks to your question regarding the volatility and the relatively speaking, the smooth trend that goes forward is, for things that we know, for example, when we project things under current law, those can be reflected in sort of the output of the models. There are certain things that are unforeseen, and there are certain things that we get feedback from various experts from around the healthcare industry that help to better inform ultimately where our projection goes. And I'll use drugs as an example. Frequently, we're told about certain drugs that they're going to treat particular things like obesity, for example, are in the pipeline, but the expert opinion is not specific enough to target that those drugs will hit the market at, say, in 2009 or 2010, but rather in the next 2 to 7 years. And so when we examine and analyze the results of the models that we have that build into the projection, the fundamentals that have been observed over time, we observe what that resulting projection is, we can sort of add factors, what we call it, up and down slightly, to try to build in the expert opinion that we get. And one of the things that we're careful to not do is to imply specificity that we really don't have. And so ultimately, as you go out, each year's projection is intended to reflect the probability of these things coming into play as we move forward, which, again, can kind of result into a, results in rather in a somewhat less volatile projection.
Yeah, and one other thing, I have this the public-private slide up because, you know, the big ups and downs in the public is a lot of it has to do with legislative changes, and so our projections on a current law basis, and so we don't have any sort of, you know, BBA or anything that might come and cut growth or, you know, MMA that increased growth in 2006. So, you know, because we don't try to anticipate legislative changes, that's another reason why the growth is basically stable in the projection period. Do you have something else to
say? Oh, I just wanted to raise one last point, which I think is really interesting on the projected trend, which is that the medical crisis is pretty important, which is because if you look at the historical data, the behavior relative to price inflation over the past about 12 to 13 years has been quite different than it was in the period through 1995. The question is, what's going on there? Do we expect it to return to a historical trend? And the assumption that we have embedded in our forecast is that the answer is somewhere in between. There are a couple of factors that feed into this. One is that physician incomes have been growing more slowly for a long period of time, relative to overall professional capital. And in our projection, we assume that ultimately, by the end of the 10-year forecast horizon, that convergence, we end up with ultimately physicians have to grow at the same rate as the ultimate populations. And the result is that relative medical price inflation accounts for a larger share of growth, slightly larger share of growth over the next 10 years than it has over the past 10 years. But that's really a matter of judgment in terms of the interpretation that you place on the behavior of price inflation.
Robert, did you have a question?
The last part of what you said, positioning growth.
Over the next 10 years. So the past 10 years, physician incomes have tended to grow more slowly than professional technical workers as a whole. And so the assumption is that that can't go on forever without ultimately affecting the supply of physicians. So that in the long term, by the 10-year end of our horizon, the rate of growth will converge.
You're talking about, when you say professional technical workers, you're talking about?
I'm talking about that there's an employment cost index that the European Labor Statistics publishes for all professional technical
workers. Not just in healthcare?
Not correct. Just healthcare.
Okay.
All professional technical workers.
Yes.
Aliza Marcus and Bloomberg. I just one very simple question. Is out-of-pocket spending the same as personal health care spending, essentially?
No. So this is out-of-pocket spending is the co-payments and deductibles that you might pay at the point of service. Personal health care spending would also include not just out-of-pocket spending, but it would also include private health insurance would pay for, but also what Medicare would pay for, what Medicaid would pay for, and what, I mean, personal health care spending encompasses all payers. So it would include in that what the other payers, you know, including other public, which is the VA or DOD. So out-of-pocket spending just includes co-payments and deductibles that you pay at the point of service. It does not include what you pay as the employee share of the premiums that you pay for private health insurance. It does not include that.
It also includes expenditures if you were non-profit. So if you went to see the physician and you didn't have insurance, whatever, you pay out-of-pocket.
Right.
So it's all out-of-pocket, irrespective of direct out-of-pocket, irrespective of your public stuff.
But it doesn't include what you pay for your insurance.
Correct. Why don't you use the term health spending rather than personal health spending?
personal health care spending is actually a subset of NHE, and that covers any service or product that's dispensed in the care of an individual person. So that would be hospital physician, nursing home, home health, prescription drugs, medical durables, non-durables. And then NHE also consists of the rest of it, the non-personal health care, consists of things like government public health activity, research, construction, et cetera. So these are really subsets of total health care spending. But this gets to the actual health care provision to an individual.
So personal health care spending, sorry, includes what Medicare pays, Medicaid pays, VA pays. So the only difference in national health expenditure, the difference is then that includes construction, research, other things.
Right, exactly. It's sort of looking at it, not necessarily in terms of payers. It encompasses all payers, but looking at what is being provided.
Personal health care is what, 90+% of
total. So what this data seems to be saying is that without the baby boomers being a big factor, we're going to see a doubling in health care spending in the next 10 years, and price is the biggest factor explaining that?
Yes, you know, price has been the biggest factor historically, and so price is also projected to be the biggest factor in the next 10 years. As far as the growth in prices, the average is around 3.7% for the projection period. So, you know, we'll leave it to others to determine whether that's relatively high or low, but it is relatively stable, projected to be relatively stable, and so but you know, the finding is that over the projection period we believe that the biggest factor is price, which has also been the biggest factor in the historical period.
And John, also think of it this way: just over a 10-year period, you're selling something that's growing at 7% per year, then the level of that something doubles. And that's about the average rate of growth we have for the development structures, which is why they doubled. Now, the more interesting question is, 7% unusually fast or slow? And it's sort of in the middle. It's faster than the best, and not nearly as fast as the worst. And a few things are growing a little faster than 7%, but it's growing a little slower. But that's a good baseline to keep in mind. Overall, 7%, which is not out of line with what you normally think of for healthcare cost expense growth.
The growth in the prices, now part of that is wages, and part of it is the prices, like prices of drugs, prices of, what's the split? Are they both growing at the same rate in your projections, or are one of them outpacing the other?
It's your question, is wages?
Like, part of the increase in prices is nursing wages, physician earnings, and part of it is the price of drugs, the price of the objects, and the change in the mix of objects towards more expensive objects or cheaper objects.
Right. So we have, I can tell you looking at our numbers here that drug price growth is expected to be around 3.7% per year. So that's basically the same as the total hospital
price growth only.
Price growth only. Right. And so hospital, it looks like it's a little bit lower than 3.7%. Maybe it's around 3.6%, the average growth rate, average hospital price growth rate. However, physician is a little bit higher at around, physician price growth is projected to be a little bit higher, around 4%. And a lot of this has to do with what Sheila had mentioned as far as our expected convergence of income growth, you know, converging with the professional technical workers over the projection period.
What are the other?
The major determinant of medical price inflation is an index of prices, which is based on the structure of our market baskets, reflect the composition of costs for each of the different settings. So we would have a different weight on, for example, compensation and a weight on drug purchases. And that should be reflected. In general, it has been the case that relative growth in compensation is the most important factor partly because of the largest factor, but also because it tends, it's more specific to the health sector. That relative growth and compensation is the main determinant of relative price inflation. And because we are making the assumption that physician income will ultimately return to converge with alternative occupations and therefore grow faster than it has been over the past 10 to 12 years, that ultimately that cost will drive variable price inflation a little bit faster than it has been historically.
To the extent anyone is interested, on the CMS web page, if you search on market baskets, you'll see the various input price indexes and the cost weights that are associated with each of the categories, like wages and salaries, like prescription drugs, all the way down to things like cleaning solution that provide an operator nursing home, for example. So
there's not a very easy short answer to your question.
Damn.
Any other questions?
Okay, well, thank you all very much, and thank you and for all your colleagues. And we look forward to publishing this paper tomorrow, and you'll see it online at healthaffairs.org tomorrow.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you.